Hey, welcome to my show, Feng Shui Your Way on UK Health Radio. I'm Janine Lo, your go-to Feng Shui consultant and Chinese astrologer. I've been helping people transform their lives for over 20 years, from private clients to big names and businesses, and I can't wait to share my tips and stories with you. Today's guest is Christopher Jones, one of the UK's leading figures in modern hand reading and cryology. Trained under the UK Cryology Society in the early 1980s and later leading the organisation for a decade. Christopher has spent over 40 years researching the psychology, symbolism and spiritual meaning of the human hand, blending sociology, psychology, philosophy and esoteric traditions. His work brings palmistry into the modern age of through scientific study and spiritual insight. He is the author of the new book, The Palmistry of Fingerprints, The Secret Patterns Hidden in Your Fingers and Palms, which explores how the unique patterns in our hands may reveal personality, perception, and life purpose. Christopher, welcome to UK Health Radio.
Hi, thanks Janine for having me on your show. It's a pleasure to be here.
This is an interesting subject. I don't actually know very much about it, but I'm super interested in learning about it. And I know you know it inside out. So I'm going to ask the very first question, which you've probably answered many, many times. For our listeners new to the subject, what exactly is hand reading or cryology?
Cryology or hand reading, or probably more commonly known as palmistry. Basically, it's the study of the features of the hand to assess personality, character and temperament. And that's how it's palmistry has been like that for hundreds of years. There's always been that interest in understanding people from looking at the patterns of the hand. But the modern iteration of hand reading goes beyond just personality. It looks at your emotional balance. It looks at how your relationship orientations. It can tell things about people's health from the hand. Looking at the fingerprints, which is one of the main parts of the book to come out, The Palmistry of Fingerprints, is looking at the genetics of the fingerprints and what that tells you about genetic propensities for health and disease. But you can see all sorts of things about people from the hands. Basically, you can build up a profile of what the person's like. You're able to see what kind of jobs the person does. You can be able to give vocational guidance. You're able to see what kind of emotional preferences and needs someone has. And therefore, you can give relationship guidance. You can compare the handprints for two people in a relationship and work out what's the dynamics of that. You can see childhood trauma in the hand. You can see the effects of your childhood, your parenting, parents' effect upon you as a child, issues of neglect, childhood sexual abuse, those kind of more severe traumas quite clearly and evidentially show up in the hand. So effectively, the hand is kind of like a map of your consciousness. At a physical, emotional, psychological, creative, and spiritual level, so it's a pretty damn good indicator of who and what you are.
So, I've got so many questions. So how did they start to find out about the things in your hat? Where did that come from then?
Well, there's quite a few different strands in hand reading. I don't want to go through the whole history of it because it has got a very ancient history going back thousands of years in India and in China, about 1,000 years in Europe. So the earliest traditions in hand reading in Europe come from date from about the 12th century. And I have written a whole history of hand reading. So I have spent a lot of time studying all of that as well. But modern hand reading kind of is born out of the 19th century quest to understand human psychology. So before the unconscious was invented, and it's important to understand that before Freud wrote his book, The Interpretation of Dreams, which was only published in 1899, there wasn't really anything understood as the unconscious. So you didn't really have that languaging for describing sort of the inner workings of a human being. They were looking at the physical body. So there was anthropometry, there was phrenology, there was dermatoglyphics or fingerprint analysis was starting to come in that time. There were body types that they were looking at. There was a kind of very strong scientific interest in understanding the physical body and what that could tell about human beings. And so they would measure people's skulls and they would measure their body and they would build up these pictures of what people were like and try to understand the inner workings of the human psyche. And probably the most obvious example of the success of that approach was the work of John Langdon Down. So John Langdon Down would go and visit the lunatic asylums in London. And he noticed that there were these people in the asylums who all looked very, very similar. And he collected them together. And that's why Down syndrome is called Down syndrome. It's named after John Langdon Down. He noticed that they had very similar physical characteristics, very similar emotional characteristics and cognitive characteristics. And so before all that, the genetics of Down syndrome was understood. They were looking at the physical type to try and work out what was going on with these different kinds of people. So the idea that we can understand personality from the physical form of the body has a very strong root in 19th century empirical science. For example, they were analyzing the hand and dissecting the hand, and they worked out that there were more nerve endings connecting the hand and the brain than between the brain and any other part of the body. So they were very interested in the form and function of the hand from that point of view. And there were scientists in the early part of the 20th century, like Charlotte Wolfe, who went and investigated the hands of apes and gorillas, because they were looking at it from an evolutionary biology point of view. Because we have fingerprint patterns, apes have fingerprint patterns, all the chimpanzees, gorillas and stuff, they all have fingerprint patterns too. So she went to London Zoo, she took all the handprints of all the gorillas and the apes in London Zoo, and was doing comparative studies of the hands of apes and the hands of human beings. And at the same time as all of this was going on, the science of dermatoglyphics, which is the study of the skin ridges of the hand, was also developing as well. So people know about fingerprint patterns because everybody knows they've got them. I mean, it's an interesting biological fact that we have skin ridges and fingerprints, and so do apes and gorillas, and so do koala bears for some strange reason. The only other animal in the animal kingdom that has fingerprints is the koala bear. The interest in understanding of fingerprint patterns really kind of developed in the late 19th century. And there was a guy called William Herschel, who was a commissioner in India. He established that the fingerprint patterns didn't change, that they remained constant over time. And then there's a guy called Francis Galton, who was actually the cousin of Charles Darwin, wrote several books in the 1890s, where he classified the fingerprint systems and patterns and developed the systems of classification that are still in use today. So that was in 1892, 1895. In 1901, Scotland Yard adopted fingerprinting as a system.
Oh, that was where I was going to go. I was going to say,
It's as recent as that. Yeah, wow. It's as recent as that, 1901. But it was only up to that point that they worked out that the fingerprint patterns were unique. And so, I mean, they kind of had some idea about that because people in places like India were using them instead of signatures because they couldn't write. So they used their thumbprint to sort of say they'd been paid and things like that. But when Galton sort of analysed all of that and it was established that the fingerprint patterns don't change, and moreover, that every single fingerprint pattern is unique, that's when it became possible for the forensic services and the police services around to use them for identification. So what we're starting with essentially is this notion that the hand is a biometric representation of our individuality. The fingerprint patterns are unique. There are not 8 billion different fingerprint patterns. There are 80 billion different fingerprint patterns on this planet. There are no two fingerprint patterns that are alike.
So not even
identical twins. Even identical twins don't have identical fingerprint patterns. So what you've got there is something that is a descriptor of something that is unique about you. And it doesn't change over time. So it's something unique about you that describes your identity. Your identity is something that stays constant over time. And so if that's the case, why would that not tell you something about your unique identity as a human being?
I'm honestly blown away by this, to be honest with you, because I never knew that. It's something that's always interested me, but I never knew you could actually see so much. I was in Seville working the other week, and it's changed. Going into EU, you have to go and get. There's about 6 machines and 200 people trying to get their things. And the questions it was asking, even to do with your fingerprints. So now, really, what I'm talking all over this, but one of the things that you said earlier was that you can get your health out of your hands. So if you can get your health in your hands, are you able to start to give people alternative medicine to help them?
I really do think there's a place for hand reading in a medical context, mm-hmm. if it's practiced by people who are medically qualified to do so. I think it would be a very helpful supplementary diagnostic tool for people. In fact, it already is a supplementary diagnostic tool. If you go to your GP, he might look at your tongue, but he might also look at your fingernails, or he might look at the palm of your hands. So there's a whole body of medical literature that says the color and the condition or the clamminess of the skin texture of your hand basically gives you medical indications to do with your thyroid, whether it's hyperactive or hypoactive, to do with your iron and iron levels, whether you're anemic, to do with your cardiovascular conditions. The nails themselves have all sorts of indications to do with liver disease, kidney disease, vitamin and mineral balances, lung disease, thoracic diseases, cancers, and so on and so forth. There's a huge body of medical literature which looks at the hand simply as a manifestation of systemic disease. So you can look at the hand and see there's something not wrong with the hand, not like it's being hit with a hammer or something that, but you can see that there's a problem with your heart or your lungs or your kidneys or your liver. That's not chirology, really. I mean, that's medical literature. Yeah. But chirologists, because we're looking at hands, we read all that literature, we read all that stuff, we know all that stuff, we incorporate in what we're doing. So we will look at hands, and you know, if I see a condition like palmar erythema in a person's hand, I will say to them, are you on medication or are you drinking a lot of alcohol? And I'll finally get asked some questions, and they'll say, oh yes, I get out in the pub every night. And I say, well, your liver's getting a bit munted, you know, because that's what palmar erythema shows. So go to a naturopath and get it checked out and maybe do a liver detox or something like that. So, you know, that's part of the armory of a professional modern hand reader, is we learn all that medical literature stuff because we're looking at hands. And if we see some of those signs and symptoms in the fingernails or the shape and structure of the palm, then we can advise people to go to a particular therapist or whatever disposition to assist them with that. So that's one level. So
okay,
we're just going to answer the question.
Right. I'm so excited, but I have to stop you now. We're just going to head over to our sponsors.
After that, we'll come back to the fingertip part of that. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Well, it's all the extraordinary things that you're saying. I'm so excited. So hold on, listeners, we'll see you on the other side.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job. She was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio. Or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So we're back, and before you say anything more, Christopher, I just wanted to say something. You said about health, and I had a big car accident, and rather than taking drugs, I can pinpoint a part on my hand, that will stop the headaches if you push it.
Done like a sort of shiatsu point or acupressure point.
Yeah, so that makes sense what you say about palmistry. I do
really I mean that's not anything to do with hand reading, but yes, that's another whole modality which involves the hand. That's not something that we would study looking at acupressure points in the hand. That was something that a shiatsu practitioner would look at. But what you're looking at there basically, and then what you're acknowledging, is that the hand has a reflection of other parts of the body. And then we know that with reflexology. We know that with the traditional Chinese medicine, people look at the ears and they look at the tongue. And that's the sense in which the medical profession have looked at the features of the hand and can tell about, for example, blood circulation and the vascular conditions. But the other thing about fingerprints, I think, is important to mention as well. Yes. Because my book, The Palmistry of Fingerprints, is about fingerprints. I don't talk about the medical side of the hand at all. That's a subject for another day. But the interesting thing about the dermatoglyphics, the fingerprint patterns, is once it was discovered that they were unique, and that they had a genetic component, then this whole body of knowledge called dermatoglyphics evolved out of that. And in the 1920s, 30s, 40s, and 50s in particular, they began researching, what does it mean to have this kind of fingerprint pattern? What are the genetic dispositions of that? And there's a huge body of literature, probably getting up for something like 10,000 medical research papers, published in medical journals, the British Medical Journal, Journal of the Royal Medical Association, that sort of thing. They are basically showing, and they've done studies, peer-reviewed studies, that basically have shown that the different fingerprint patterns are associated with different dispositions towards diseases. So there are the three main fingerprint patterns of the arch, the loop, and the whorl. That's what Galton decided in 1892. And each of those has a particular association with particular diseases. So, for example, the ulnar loop is associated with Alzheimer's disease and pre-senile dementia. There was an article by a guy called Weinreb in the Journal Archives of Neurology in 1985, big study studying the significance of loops as a significant indicator of a disposition to pre-senile dementia. Lots of research work has been done with whorl fingerprint patterns and the association to heart disease, and the arch pattern, it's been associated with intestinal disorders and constipation and blocked conditions of the intestines. So there's a body of literature that's already exists, which has basically looked at the fingerprint patterns from a medical point of view, because they see the fingerprint patterns as genetic. So you can look at the hand and you can kind of work out what dispositions people have for sort of diseases, and you can look at the hand and see if they've got particular manifestations that may show you that they have impoverished conditions of certain parts, certain organs of the body. But I stress again, from a hand reading point of view, we just advise people and basically say, look, you need to go and see a professional, get a professional diagnosis, but go and have a look at this and get it checked out. But I think if anybody was they were a doctor or a naturopath, or they had a medical training and they incorporated hand reading into their diagnostic work, it will be incredibly useful for them.
Gosh, this is so much to take in. And I'm finding it really interesting. So I am definitely going to buy your book.
Please do.
Palmistry of your fingers, secret patterns hidden in your fingers. So basically, you're saying that your fingertips are a blueprint for your life. You're also saying that you have the DNA of your family in there as well.
Yeah. Yeah, the fingerprint patterns are genetic. So what that means is they run in families. So you might, if you have whorls, it's probably likely your parents have whorl fingerprint patterns. In the same way as, if you get heart disease, it's probably likely that your parents had heart disease. And the family history runs through the family too. But yeah, the fingerprint patterns have a genetic component. And so they are like a part of, like an expression of your DNA. And that's, again, what's interesting about the studies of Down syndrome, because Down syndrome is a genetic disorder, but they didn't discover that until much, much later in the piece. I mean, they didn't know about chromosomes until 1946, so they didn't really have an understanding of what was causing Down syndrome. But there's hundreds and hundreds of studies. The most studied hand feature of all is the studies that have been done into Down syndrome and how that works. But it's not just physiological. So now there are obviously physical conditions in Down syndrome, but what we also know about Down syndrome is that they are cognitively very challenged and they are emotionally very effusive.
Yeah.
And because they are like that, that's why they live in communities and we take care of them, because they don't have the sort of rational functions that most people have. But you've got a personality profile that comes out of that too. And that shows up in the lines of the hand. So the lines of the hand can show the kind of functioning psychology. So there's one line in the hand called the headline in palmistry, or the airline. And when you in the hands of people with Down syndrome, it's that line which is particularly compromised. Instead of having two lines running across the hand, it forms one line, which is called a simian line in the medical profession. And what you have there is a fusion of head and heart. You might look at your own hands and see you've got two lines going across, one going up to the fingers, that's your heart line, the one going across below is the headline. But when those two lines are fused together, you have an emotionality that overwhelms cognitive function. And that's, of course, exactly what we have in Down syndrome. Now, that simian line formation occurs in about 1% of the general population. It occurs in 55% of people with Down syndrome. It's overwhelmingly common in people with chromosomal disorders and extremely rare in people who don't have chromosomal disorders. And normal people with simian lines, I'll just throw this in because I think it's important given the current political climate in the United Kingdom. There are the two people who've got simian lines. When people who don't have Down syndrome have simian lines, they are usually people who are on a mission, who are incredibly zealous and who want to change things and not necessarily things for the better. The last prime minister in the United Kingdom who had simian lines was Tony Blair. And I had an article about him in the Times in 1998 where I talked about him and I said, he's dangerous. He's going to change the world in a really bad way. Yeah. And the only other person I know who's got simian lines equally now is Nigel Farage. So basically, watch out.
I have something to say. I can't believe we have to go to an advert again, but and that's great. I love our adverts. I love our sponsors. I'm just going to hand over. But when we come back, I want to talk about your book in as little detail as possible and as much detail as you can in 10 minutes. So we're just going to hand over to our sponsors. And when we come back, we are going to talk about Christopher Sterling's book.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
How am I going to, because you're so passionate. I'm really, you know, I wish this show was longer because I have if you can hear this listeners, I have a million questions to ask him. You're so informative. So let's talk about your book. As someone going to buy it, yeah, why would I? I know I want to because I'm very I've done some history into you and I've checked you out, and that's why I wanted you on my show, because what you've done it just fascinates me. But for our listeners, tell me why they should buy your book.
Okay. Well, the book is called The Palmistry of Fingerprints. It's unlike any other book on palmistry. I don't talk about the lines of the hand. I don't talk about anything else. I only talk about the fingerprint patterns. That's not quite true. I do, in fact, say, well, in fact, the lines are important because the lines change. And there's a couple of examples at the first chapter of the book that says the lines don't stay the same. The lines change. And, you know, and therefore, we need to concentrate on the things in the hand which don't change. And then I go on to talk about the importance of fingerprints, a little bit of history of the fingerprinting that we've talked about, the classification of fingerprint patterns. So the first thing that people can do from looking at the book is they can learn to classify their own fingerprint patterns. Have they got loops? Have they got whorls? Have they got arches? Those are the three main fingerprint patterns. There are four minor patterns and three really rare patterns. There's about 10 unique patterns altogether. And then I go on to explain the meaning and significance of each of those patterns. Now, I call it the palmistry of fingerprints because whilst I talk about the genetics of it and the medical aspects to the fingerprint patterns, and I think that's important, I don't focus on that. The primary focus on the book is on the psychological interpretation of the fingerprint patterns. So each of the finger patterns occur on the different fingers. Each of the different fingers have a provenance, different provenance in personal psychology. And so I explain the significance of each of the patterns on each of the fingers. So you can look them up. You can say, well, I've got a whorl on my index finger. Then you can go to page 52 and work out read what it means to have a whorl on your ring finger. Or you can look at the fingerprint patterns of your partner and say, oh, look, he's got three arches on the index fingers and the middle finger of the left hand. And you can go and look that up and see what that all means. And then after that, I talk about the palmar patterns too, because you don't only have fingerprint patterns on your fingers. You also have fingerprint patterns in your palm. So there are palmar patterns. You get little loops between the fingers. You get patterns on the ball of your thumb and in the lower part of the hand. And so they all have a significance and meaning too. And often those can show particular skills and abilities, talents, if you like, that people have. So that's all explained in the book. It's really easy to read. Anyone who's not had any experience of hand reading can read the book. If you're not sure about that, you can go on my YouTube channel and watch the videos. I've actually done some video explainers of how to identify the fingerprint patterns as well. So that's a complimentary thing to go with the book. And then you can read your own fingerprint patterns and you'll find out about yourself. You'll find out who you are, why you are, and what you are. I mean, the most extraordinary thing about handwriting, and I've just done a festival here in New Zealand and, you know, read 30 hands in two and a half days. Goodness. And the most extraordinary thing when you do that kind of reading is you help people see who they are. The fingerprint patterns are like the blueprint of your personality. They are the formative influence of your personality and your consciousness. They are kind of like your essential nature, really, because they're unchanging throughout your life. They describe something really fundamental to who or what you are in the world. It describes your abilities, your orientations, whether you're a team player or a loner, whether what skills you have. Why do you like art? Why do you like designing? Why do you like planning? Why are you good at talking? You know, there are all those different kind of qualities that we each have are expressed in the fingerprints. And in the latter part of the book, I've got some three examples. I've put Jimi Hendrix, John Lennon, and Malcolm X in the book because one of the theories we have about fingerprint patterns is that if rare and unusual fingerprint patterns will produce rare and unusual people. So the way you test that hypothesis is you find the fingerprints of really rare and unusual people.
Yeah.
And we can agree that Jimi Hendrix was a rare and unusual guitarist and John Lennon was a rare and unusual singer-songwriter and Malcolm X was a rare political figure. And lo and behold, they have rare and unusual fingerprint patterns, like statistically extraordinarily rare fingerprint patterns. And so that's the hypothesis. If you want to find out who you are as a core identity of your individuality, what's unique about you and what your unique contribution is to the world, understanding your fingerprint patterns will help. And that's why I've written the book. I mean, you know, I actually wrote the book 35 years ago when I was living in Oxford, and it's just taken me this long to get around to publishing it. So it's overdue. But the people I know who I taught hand reading in the 1990s have used it as their reference book for their professional practice of hand reading for the last 30 years. It's been road tested by dozens of people around the world. It's extraordinarily powerful insight into who you are, what you are, and why you are who you are.
Goodness. I don't even want to interrupt you because I know you're a fountain of knowledge. I suppose my question is, why you've written the book now?
Why have I published it now? Because it's time, you know. It's one of those things, you know. Sometimes you put things down, you get life takes over, and you do other things. I got married and had a family, and it's like this is a great time to get the book published because I think people are looking for meaning in their life, and this is something that will help people have that self awareness and self discovery that will make their life meaningful. And I think it answers a lot of sort of existential questions about who am I. I mean, the biological and medical genetic stuff is interesting, but you know, who am I is the kind of perennial question I think that people want to wrestle with. And the thing that I found about hand reading is, I mean, more than anything else, I mean, I've done a lot of psychology. There are lots of tests like MBTI, which I think is really good. You know, the things like astrology, I'm a practicing astrologer too, but I don't think there's anything that beats hand reading, because you can't argue about your hands, because the patterns of your hands, they're there, they're connected to you, they're on the end of your arms. You know, it's indisputable that the hands are part of who you are. Yeah. You express everything in your world through your hands. So what, and your mind and your hands, brain and your hands are intimately connected neurologically. Why would that, exactly, why would the hands not be a reflection of your identity? And then when you think about the fingerprint patterns and you think, well, each fingerprint pattern is unique. That fingerprint pattern on the index finger tells me about my unique identity. There's something very powerful about that.
What you can't see, listeners, is that as Christopher's talking to me, I'm forever looking at the finger that he's talking about, thinking, oh, I wonder what that is. But I can't see it. Maybe it's because I've got not powerful enough glasses, or maybe because you can't rub your finger marks out. You know,
You can't rub them off, but it is true that as we get older, the skin gets thinner. So it's a combination of three things: your eyesight, the light quality, and the skin getting thinner with aging. But they are still there. You just might need a brighter light and a magnifying glass. That could also help as well. So they're indelible. You're born with your fingerprints. They form in the womb at the 16th week of gestation. So they, you know, you're born with them, and they're unchanging throughout your entire life. They are the karmic patterns for this lifetime. They're unchanging, and it's like they describe your sort of internal nature. I think that's a really good way of putting it.
You said you're an astrologer. Obviously, I'm an astrologer, and I see the DNA in that. But I've never thought about the human body in that way. So I have. Can I ask one more question? And I know I'm overrunning a little bit here. What do you think, when people read your book, they will literally discover about themselves that they can use in their life? I know you said
self knowledge and self-awareness. Self-knowledge and self-awareness is everything. The oracle at Delphi, know thyself. You know, if you have self-knowledge and self-awareness, then whatever decisions you make in your life is an informed decision, because you know what your needs are, you know what your preferences are, you know what your skills are, you know what your attributes are, you know what it is that you want, because you know who you are and what you are. And that's incredibly healing and incredibly reassuring to have that. The most common thing people say after they have had hand reading is, they, I feel affirmed, I feel seen, I feel known, and I feel understood, like no one's ever understood me ever before. And that self-revelation is a complete gift. And we as hand readers have the privilege of being able to do that for people.
Goodness, I found a tingle all the way down my back when you said that. So, Christopher, where can people find you?
I think probably the best place is to go to www.handreadinginternational.com. It's an international organisation of hand readers all over the world, including loads of them in Britain. So that's that, and they can get hold of me through that, or from my own website, www.handreading.nz. So that was probably the easiest thing for people to do. And there is a YouTube channel too, so go to that.
And when is your book out?
The book's out. It came out on the 27th of January, so it's available now at amazon.co.uk and amazon.com, and hopefully in some of the bookshops too, but it's available online.
So thank you so much for coming on, Christopher. It's been amazing.
You're welcome.
It's such a fascinating perspective you've taught us today. What I want to say to my listeners, what today's conversation reminds us, that perhaps self-knowledge is closer than we think. Not written somewhere far away, but present within us, quite literally at our fingertips. Goodbye from me, and goodbye from Christopher. Thanks so much for tuning in to Feng Shui Your Way. I can't wait to share more insights and inspirations with you in the next episode. Remember, life is all about creating harmony and welcoming positive energy into your world.
Until next time, stay balanced and keep your energy flowing.